Reality, a podcast that combines lived experience with the scientific knowledge of burnout to help listeners prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. My name is Shannon Swales, a human and clinical psychologist with both lived experience and scientific knowledge and skills in burnout. It is my hope that the values of authenticity, compassion, wisdom, and community shine through in each and every episode of the pod. Episodes that share my own and others' lived experiences of burnout, and interviews expert guests to help listeners build awareness and hope to prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. The views, opinions, tips, and the like expressed by myself or my guests are not a replacement of personalized therapy. Just like I have done for myself and many of my guests, I encourage those of you that are suffering to seek professional help. Welcome to this month's episode of When Burnout Becomes Reality, where we focus in on a topic that I hadn't considered before meeting the expert guest, Anna Weirdroth, who is a clinical psychologist who specializes working with couples and individuals who are experiencing burnout within their relationships. Anna takes us on a journey of understanding what is relationship burnout, why it shows up and how it shows up, and also how one can move from this cycle of burnout into more of a cycle of fulfillment within themselves, but also their relationships. So it's certainly a must listen to in terms of anyone out there who is in relationships, which let's face it, is everybody. And not just, although we focus on romantic relationships, we also bring in how this may apply to other relationships as well, friendships, family, work relationships. So certainly really worth having a listen. Definitely an episode that I learned a lot from. So I look forward to hearing your thoughts. So grab that cuppa, or if you're about to hit the trails or drive to work, sit back and listen to Anna's wisdom. Thank you. Hi, Anna, and welcome to When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. Thank you so much for your willingness to make space in your diary to come on the show to share your wisdom around burnout in relationships. So, yeah, welcome.
Thanks, Shannon. It's lovely to be able to speak with you.
Absolutely love it. I'm always looking forward to the conversations I have with my guests, but this particular topic, I think it's every topic. I feel like I learn so much. It's an opportunity for me to grow as a practitioner in this space as well. So I get so excited just to be able to learn, from you. So yeah, thank you. So yeah, welcome. Yeah. But hey, before we get into this juicy topic, I'd love to the audience to get to know a bit about you, your professional background, and what brings you to be talking about such an important topic like relationships and burnout.
I trained as a psychologist, and then a little bit later in my career became a clinical psychologist. And I did that because I was finding that the clients that I was working with, there was just more that was needed in terms of making sense of what was happening for them and helping them to really experience shifts at a level that actually created the kind of change that they wanted in their life. But even training as a clinical psychologist, I found that I still needed more. I still needed more understanding of how to really make sense of what's happening for people at that really deep level. So then I started researching and working from the psychodynamic approach. The clients that I work with often I think it's super common for people to have relationship stress, but I was finding that the individuals and the couples that I was working with, one partner just seemed to be working so much harder, and they seemed to be so frazzled and what I would now call burnt out. And I got really, really curious about that space, trying to figure out, like, why is this happening and why do I see this pattern over and over again? And since starting my private practice 4 years ago, that's kind of who I've focused on trying to help. So my knowledge around that keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm really excited to be able to share where my understanding of it is at. Anyway, hopefully it'll be helpful for people.
Oh, most certainly. Thank you for sharing that, that professional development there. Like, just what I heard from that is that curiosity. I know you use that word too, of just continuing to develop to be able to help your clients, getting that deeper and deeper learning. And you felt that each path, the psych and then the training for that, and then the clinical psych training, and then the psychodynamic training that you've got as you were being exposed to clients and feeling like, yeah, I need that little more extra to be able to work with them. And yeah, we're so lucky to have you because you're working with couples, as you said, and individuals that you're noticing this relationship stress on the ground there from people with the lived experience. You're able to share the wisdom that you've gained from there, with the stress. And I was nodding my head as well because I noticed that a lot too in working with individuals, that a lot of the, I don't work with couples, but working with individuals, so much stress occurs, and chronic stress, ongoing stress occurs within relationships. So yeah, such an important area that I'm going to learn so much too today. So yeah, thank you. Yeah, so let's get into that. So my first question about that is, and I'm just looking at my notes here, that I remember being immediately drawn to connecting with you, and I know I've shared this with you with our chats before this recording, because I never heard that term out, a term out term relationship burnout. But it made complete sense because we experience stress within our relationships, and burnout is a chronic stress. But I was wondering for the audience, sharing what you mean by that term, relationship burnout. So getting a bit of an understanding of what that looks like, what shows up. How would we know we're experiencing that, in our relationships?
Well, you would probably find that you are preoccupied by what's not going right in your relationship. And what I mean by that is how the connection between you and your partner feels. You might be quite aware that your partner is quite distant, that they don't seem to open up a lot, they kind of keep to themselves. And you might be finding that you yourself are actually working really hard to try and get them to open up or feel more comfortable or to understand what's interfering in the closeness between the two of you. And you would probably find that you've been doing this for a very, very long time. And you've tried lots of different things to try and resolve this. You might have read lots of books. You might have listened to lots of podcasts. You might have, been to a therapist to try and get some advice around this. But nothing seems to be working. And you would probably find that this has been going on for so long that you're now feeling at a loss. Like you might actually be at the helpless, hopeless stage, but it probably comes with a ton of anxiety because if you can't fix this, the relationship is going to end and you don't want that to happen. What I tend to see is that people, one partner will be pouring so much energy and so much love and so much attention into the relationship, but the relationship is not reciprocating it, or it's not responding to it in the way that you might hope it does. So yeah, this constant giving and not much getting back leads to this kind of what I call feeling quite burnt out in the relationship. And you might be at a place where you're ready to give up, but you still want to give it one more go.
Oh God, as you were sharing that, just the parallels with what I understand about burnout in general as a syndrome, that exhaustion, that want to give up or not having much to give or very little to give, like you're at that point, although you don't want to give up, like on on the relationship in this stance, but your role, your job as a whatever you're doing. And also what you shared there too, like they just felt like a mismatch in terms of workload, like the load being more on one than the other and not getting back. And that is something we often see in that burnout space as well. Like it's just like I was like, oh yeah, wow. It makes complete sense. So yeah, thank you for sharing a little bit more. And I was curious because I know did a deep dive or a dive into your work and into the blog and resources that you have. And I know you talk about the burnout cycle within the context of relationships. And I know maybe some of what you shared already maybe talks to that, but I was wondering if you could, break that apart or share with us what that looks like to, help bring up that vision on this burnout in relationships.
Yes. So the main reason I call it a cycle is because it tends to cycle. So once this process starts of one partner giving a lot, it's not going to be like this, or usually it isn't from the very beginning of the relationship. It usually comes in at some point later, where the part one partner starts to withdraw and the other partner starts to give more. And what happens as part of that experience, like once the relationship or the attachment with your partner feels threatened, the person who is susceptible to burnout will unconsciously, or maybe consciously as well, but a lot of this is unconsciously, switch their focus to their partner's needs, their partner's desires, their partner's wants. And they will start to lose more and more touch with what their own needs are, with what their own desires are, with what their own wants are. And so you get this cycle of having a person who is trying so hard to understand the other person, and they lose connection with themselves in that process. And that starts to cycle, especially if you have a partner who's not really able to be responsive or to recognize your needs. Like a lot of the time, what I see in couples and what I hear is that whole dance leads to the partner who is it leads to the other partner kind of starting to shut down more or withdraw more. And then we kind of get into some of the fundamentals of why that is. But in terms of it cycling, it's this process, and it just kind of escalates the more that it kind of happens.
That why bit, yes, I want to go to that because that can help us understand that cycle a bit more, learning about that why. Because I was curious, I feel like I want to go to the both partners, but the partner that you share is the one that is usually the one who burns out, that's who's putting that workload in. I was curious to discover or find out what might be factors that lead them into this kind of way of behaving in relationships, that overgiving. I mean, I might be generalizing that a bit, but yeah, what those I suppose, the why factors. Like I think of things like my brain's already going to self-sacrificing, like what might be those risk factors that individual has that might behave in this way in relationships that put them at risk of burnout. Yeah, if you don't mind sharing whatever wisdom you have on that. And then going to the other partner, we'll talk about because I'm sure there's things they bring to the relationship that lead them to, be part of this cycle.
So I guess the first thing that I would say is I actually think this is way more common than we tend to think. I think a lot of us, when we're in relationship, we don't really like to focus too much on what's not going well. So we tend to focus on other things or the parts that are going well. But if you really look at a lot of relationships, I suspect a lot of them struggle with this closeness and intimacy and how much intimacy each partner wants and what kind of intimacy, physical, emotional, spiritual, intellectual. But in terms of what I've come to understand, and this will kind of speak to both partners, but basically the way that you grow up, so your very early relationships, like from the day that you're born, the way that your caregivers relate to you. A lot of us are born into families that are very, very stressed out and are very, very overwhelmed. And they are not really able to muster the resources in themselves to provide the kind of care to their child that would allow the child to flourish. And I just want to emphasize, I think this is part of normal human experience. Like we all have to try and live in this world and do the best that we can. And you know, we're all juggling multiple roles. But in this kind of dynamic, especially when you have families where there's you know, mental health issues in the mix, drug and alcohol issues in the mix, the parents are really very under-resourced in terms of providing a secure, safe connection for their child. And the child then has to figure out a way how to maintain the attachment to their caregiver, because this is the person on who they are completely dependent, and they can't have that person hating them. So this process of being really attuned to what somebody else needs, what somebody else's feelings are, and how your own feelings and needs affect the other person, it comes online really, really early because it's part of our core way of surviving in relationship. Like at that age, for a long time, we are completely dependent on the grown-ups in our life. And children are really very, very good at figuring out how to manage that. And that child then grows up and they have their own experiences in friendships and, you know, their first relationships, and then they end up in a romantic relationship that they feel is really important to them, and that, you know, that core attachment connection comes online, and it feels super important to maintain that. And any kind of thing that happens in the relationship that feels like it's a threat to that attachment activates the survival responses in the child that has now grown up. And they come back to employing all of those skills that they learned as a young child. What's happening in my significant other? What are they thinking? What are they feeling? What state are they in? What's happening in their life? How can I make their life better? How can I let them know that I'm here? How can I figure out this space?
No, thank you. That really helps in understanding how we can get to that point in our relationships as an adult and be in this quite overgiving mode when the relationship something triggers that threat, that something's not okay here in our relation, in that current relationship. It's born out of our early caregiving relationships. And I love how you quite compassionately mention, and about, parents, they are, I always have this sense of they're doing the best with what resources that they have,
Absolutely.
and sometimes they're totally under-resourced,
Yes.
and acknowledging that, because that's important. But it's also important to understand, and it's really helpful. I see it with my clients when they understand where their current behaviors come from. Like they're like that link going, oh, this is why. So it's such an important piece of information. I was curious on that, that sort of development as well, because I had in my head too, other people develop, and maybe this is something we see in gender differences too, but I imagine sometimes it may not as well, like that. So this might be a gross generalization here, but is it that in your experience that you've noticed that it tends to be women who girls, and then growing up into women that tend to develop this style of focusing on the other and what the other needs out of, their early life experiences and bringing the relationships, compared to, not to say that I'd imagine men may do as well, but yeah, just what those, because not everyone sort of develops that relationship behavior. They, may develop some other ways when under threat, in a relationship, like the withdrawal, as you mentioned, the partner often doing. But yeah, sorry, hopefully that question makes sense. But just, yeah, what are your
Yeah.
thoughts on that?
I certainly see a lot more women who are burning out in relationships, but it certainly happens to men as well. I think sometimes it can be easy to think that the person who is withdrawing and who is not seen to be giving to the relationship, that they're kind of all okay, but they're actually in their own inner struggle. Their struggle just looks completely different. Yeah. And I probably do just need to put in here at some point that when you have when you find yourself in this kind of relationship, if how do I put it? So some of the other ways of thinking about this in terms of attachment, you would think about anxious attachment and avoidant attachment. This when a partner with an anxious attachment partners with a partner with avoidant attachment. This cycle is super, super common, as in burning out. And this, the anxious partner trying to pursue the avoidant partner and the avoidant partner trying to withdraw from the anxious partner. Gross. These terms are not so much about whether you have anxiety. These terms are about how you experience the connection. How safe does the connection feel with your partner? And for people who are in either anxious or avoidant attachment, the connection feels very insecure. So from the very, maybe not the very beginning, but early on in the relationship, you both start to feel that insecurity. It's just that the person with the anxious attachment style will feel it earlier and start to try and remedy it, which then activates the avoidant partner's survival instinct of get me away from this, emotions are dangerous. And when that pattern activates, it is not uncommon. I think it's really quite common for the for really more toxic forms of relating to enter into the relationship, but they're really subtle, so they're hard to pin down. But I'm talking about emotional abuse, psychological abuse. Because, in a way, these are all tactics or strategies that attempt to manage or control what one partner does or shares. And oftentimes, the partner who is withdrawing is feeling incredibly threatened by the partner who is trying to connect. Even though the partner who's trying to connect is trying to do a good thing. That very connection is what feels so threatening to the partner with the avoidant attachment. But these toxic ways of communicating, they get activated in both partners. And most likely they've experienced that in their family of origin as well.
Thank you
Once
for
that enters, it goes to a whole next level in terms of how much stress the relationship is in. And yeah, the extent to which survival energies or modes are kind of activated and predominate.
And as we're moving into abuse style responses when feeling threatened relationship, the safety of the other. It made me think of the fight, flight, and freeze response, our body's natural
Yes.
way to respond automatically to threat for survival. And if we've learned, if we've had those early life experiences of not feeling safe enough in our relationship, so therefore we feel threatened in relationships.
Yes.
And we've learned whatever ways to survive in that relationship because we're dependent on that caregiver. We can't walk away. We can't. So we're in that. That, when we're feeling threatened, which that could be, we could be even the fact that we're in a relationship be experienced subconsciously, right? You mentioned
Yes.
earlier that a lot of this can be happening without our conscious awareness. That our bodies might even still already feel just making that move and dating and already feel threatened because of early life experience. But then when the threats become a little bit, and they could be just like, quite simple ones, right? Like I remember I was quite insecure in my relationships and it won't like go into my, but definitely, and it'd just be things like my partner going out with the boys, in
Yes.
our, natural things to do when you're in your t or even now in our 40s, my husband goes out, with his friends. So, but not feeling because that, I felt under threat. And then I definitely did have the anxious and avoidant type, I think, both. But I can just the threats obviously can go from those more minor but to major, threats in relationship. But the fact is, your system is being triggered, right? That fight, flight,
Yes.
freeze. So you're going to do whatever is innate that you've learned to keep that relationship together because it's important to you. You love this
Yes.
person. This person's important to you.
Yes.
If I'm, my little summary, if I'm understanding what you're sharing, I just thought of that fight, flight, freeze. And which I know a lot of listeners would be familiar with. It seems to be something that people are aware.
Yes.
No, it's so complex. And I was curious, I'm not sure if this was like sort of the right time to ask this, but one of the things I was curious about as well is, is this also occurring in friendships or in other types of relationships? Or, and it might not, I'm not sure if you had exposure to, but I was curious, like it feels like it could happen in any type of relationship, friendships, even long-term working relationships. But yeah, I was just wondering what your thoughts, experiences are of that with this burnout cycle occurring in other types of relationships.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's important to keep in mind that the majority of people actually have a more insecure type of attachment style. So most people, for most people, figuring out how to be in relationship with someone, especially how to be in a relationship where you can express your needs, your feelings, your thoughts. Especially how to express those if there's something happening in the relationship that doesn't feel good. Most of us really struggle with that. Like, I think the majority of people really struggle with that. They don't really have a model of doing that in a way that puts their needs, feelings, thoughts forward in a direct but compassionate way. Most of us learn backwards. Not backwards, like more roundabout ways. Like we might give someone, the silent treatment if they've annoyed us in the hope that they figure out that they've annoyed us and then apologize, which rarely happens. Sometimes it does. But yeah, these kind of ways of interacting that we hope will show somebody else that they've hurt us, but they don't really. And I think it's really, really common to feel hurt in relationships because every single one of us is coming from this lived experience, and we've had so many relationships in our life, and things stay with us. And when somebody else does something that's similar to that, it brings that back up, but it doesn't necessarily bring it all the way into consciousness. It just brings it enough into our system so that we don't feel okay. But then we're stuck with shit, I'm not feeling okay. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say shit.
I swear away. I'm cool with that. And I believe my audiences are. I always put a
Great.
warning anyway, so it's okay.
Yeah, but we end up in this state where we're then living in a dysregulated body or in a body that has a strong emotion that we don't know what to do with. And our experience, our lived experience, is that other people can't handle our emotion, or they'll be seen or said to be too much. So we then go into this process within ourselves of really trying to manage that, of trying to control our feeling of hurt or distress or upset or anger or whatever it is. And we try to manage it, and we try to make it smaller, and we try to push it down, and we try to just get on in that relationship as though everything's okay. But the thing is, these things happen often, especially as these unresolved things start to pile up. You will start to feel more and more often upset, or activated in response to what's happening in the relationship. And obviously, different relationships are different. Like, it's very different trying to manage a work relationship with your boss, to with a colleague, to with a subordinate, to with a friend, with a romantic partner. But the core of it, that we are living in relationship with other people as well as in relationship with ourselves. And we're just trying to manage that as best as we can. But most of us haven't really been shown a way to be with our own feelings and needs in a way that allows us to compassionately honor them and compassionately honor what somebody else is going through.
So if I'm hearing correctly, like it's that we all like, and I love that you normalized and validated and actually said it's quite it ha a lot of us are carrying this insecure attachment style that we've our early life experiences have developed, no fault to our own. And that's that insecure attachment. And we're carrying that, and sometimes, unawares, and we're doing our best to relate and connect with other people, but not necessarily having the skills, as you mentioned, like even to our relationship with ourselves and the emotions that come up, whether we're feeling angry at the other person or hurt or anxious, whatever, whenever that system is
Yes.
up and we're feeling threatened, we don't necessarily have the skills both with, to regulate our emotions, but also to communicate effectively with that other person, because we haven't had it, but we're not born with those things. We're taught those things and we're modeled those things. And so this keeps that cycle going as well, all of this that a lot of us are carrying. And I know certainly had to do a lot of personal work myself on my insecure attachment style, because definitely, and I'd say I'm most of the way there, but it's never, it's always something that I'm working and developing. But it's,
Yes.
yeah, I suppose this is the, I suppose that pathway forward as well is helping
Yes.
people with these challenges, with this gap in their wisdom, in their what they're holding already, and what they know helps and supports them. I find I tend to sort of summarize as sort of like, is this what I'm hearing? Because it's making sense, what you're sharing. And that obviously, that's the one thing I want to come back to, because it answers that question. Yes, it happens in all relationships, although it will look differently and they all have different meaning and context. But if we're carrying that insecure attachment, if we're carrying that lack of skills on being able to communicate and effectively regulate ourselves, no fault to our own, we're kind of, for some reason, I just had the image like a sort of a ticking time bomb, but like it, but that's probably a bit catastrophic. But it doesn't bode well in our relationships. It will create or contribute to a lot of stress, a lot of de-stress in those relationships. Yeah, for ourselves, but also in those. Is that, yeah.
I would probably say it starts a little bit earlier than that as well. Like, even before the idea of skills we have or how we know to communicate, it actually just starts with how aware are you able to be of yourself? Because that is actually incredibly challenging to maintain an awareness of what's happening in your system, what's happening in my system as I move through my day. A lot of people's lives are almost organized in such a way that they can't actually be in connection with what their needs, what their feelings, what their desires, what their wishes are. Most of us have to operate on a, well, I have to get on with it. And what we do to ourselves in that sense is we dissociate. It's a form of dissociating from what we actually need so that we can get on with doing what we need to in our lives. And this is a normal way of dissociating. This is not, the scary kind of dissociating. But it results in people who are trying to live their lives without being in touch truly with what their own needs and wants and feelings are. And finding a way to give yourself space to allow for that, I think that's the very crucial first step. And it's actually incredibly difficult. Like, if I could ask your audiences right now to kind of check in, if you ask yourself the question, am I in my body right now? And you just ask yourself, I know it's a weird question, but how close am I to my body? Where would you say? When I ask people, most of the time they're maybe an arm's length away, or even further, or maybe a little bit closer. But if I then ask you to imagine coming into your body, you start to feel things more, which then can be activating in itself because, okay, I'm feeling stuff. I'm anxious right now. I'm stressed right now. I realize I'm actually pissed off at XYZ. What on earth do I do with that? And this experience then of feeling overwhelmed with your current lived experience boots you right back out into that more dissociated space where you can still get on with everyday life. So, personally, I think these ideas of learning how to regulate or how to have more effective communication, they're all valid. Like, all of this has use. But if you're trying to apply it from a place where you're ultimately disconnected from yourself, the effectiveness is going to be limited. Because the first thing you have to get clear on is, what actually is my reality? How do I feel about it? What's it like living in this space? What's already present in my body? That's the starting point.
Thank you so much. That's so important. And yeah, it's the starting point with so many approaches to any sort of presentation with clients, is that connecting back to self and the actual reality experience, as you mentioned, though, can be very terrifying, overwhelming in itself too. And then we can, yeah, like you said, it can put us back into that threat response that we might, which might be disconnecting, just getting on with it. Or it could be that, as you mentioned before, correct me if I'm wrong, but it could be that just going back to that, what's the other, focusing on the other person. And if you've got that anxious type attachment and trying to fix it that way rather than, I'd imagine guided by you as you're working with your clients to help with that connecting self. So that is such a Yeah, important first step, but can take a while to really
Absolutely.
be okay with, and being able to not be so overwhelmed or terrified by that. And I see that with my clients with working with connecting. Yeah, it's so huge because the stuff that's there, and even with myself and my own experience, my own therapy and self-led and with other clinicians, it's like, I don't want to face some of that shit. I'm like,
Yes.
no, even me, it's like, but and at the same time, so vital because it can then help with the steps that are needed from there when we face the reality, of what is.
And this
Wow.
is also just while we're on that, this is also where if you are in relationship with someone who uses gaslighting and denial and minimizing as part of their way of relating with you, this is where for the person who burns out, it can just compound. Because when they go to their partner with something like, hey, you didn't come home after work yesterday, and you didn't message me for hours, and I felt really nervous. They don't get back, oh, did you? Gosh, sorry, it completely slipped my mind. They'll get back, what are you talking about? Like, this is no big deal. Like, why are you even nervous? Like, stop overreacting. They'll get back something like that, which makes it really like when this happens again and again and again and again and again and again and again, it makes it so hard to hold on to your reality. Like the self-doubt that generates and the extent to which that further dissociates you from what your reality is. It can get very extreme. So this process of coming back to your reality for the people that I work with is incredibly challenging because they have other people in their lives who completely deny that that's the
The
reality.
reality, and can be to the point, it sounds like too, I was just thinking of further reinforcing that it's not safe to express what you need or to
Absolutely.
express what you feel. Well, not safe in the relationships, but also, and then like you said, that doubting starting to, the internal relationship, keeping them disconnected from themselves as well. Because it's, I suppose, in terms of that cycle out of burnout, it's in relationships, it takes two people willing to do the work, right? And to create that safe space to be able to go there, to share what you feel and to be received in a safe enough way to help that process, right? But that the other partner may not be at that point, and what
No.
they're doing is actually unsafe for your
Yes.
emotional, mental, and physical well-being. And
Yes.
that's such that will keep you, what I'm hearing from you, that will keep them in that burnout cycle, not any fault to their own. They don't have a space that is safe enough to be able to heal in that relationship. Is that
I think that the part where it gets really toxic is when the partner who is, has the more anxious attachment style or is likely to burn out, the love that they experience for that partner is what drives them to keep trying harder and harder. If you have, because I have couples who come to see me with this dynamic, like things have gotten, bad. If you have two partners who are willing to look at the cycle and to do the work on themselves, healing within the relationship is possible. If you have a partner who just blames you for everything and wants you to change and don't acknowledge the impact of their own behavior or don't take accountability of how they talk to you, what they say to you, the messages that they're giving you over and over, that is just not a safe relationship. And some
Mm-hmm.
relationships are fundamentally not safe. And that can be really difficult for someone to hear and sit with because it has a
Yeah.
lot of implications.
And imagine some of the work that you've done and people you've worked with, that's a space that, yeah, I imagine that you've held space for and helping that person, in, yeah. And I was curious, and I'm not sure if, I know where my psych brain goes and how, and just some old previous clients I've worked with in that space come to mind. Because I imagine there is audience members out there where they're recognizing that. And I suppose the question that comes up for me, well, that might come up for them is that, well, where do you go from there? Or how would a psychologist, or how would a professional help if yeah, the relationship itself's not safe, but you're in this kind of insecure attachment cell that you're driven by that love and want for the relationship, like, because I know you mentioned before the importance of that self-awareness and connecting with self and all that. Like, yeah, just how you would work with that person, what would be that helping support them in breaking that cycle, or, helping support their well-being.
I think I need to say that it's not possible for one partner to break the cycle in the relationship in the sense that they can make it better by themselves.
No.
What one partner can do is recognize what they're caught up in for themselves and choose to operate from a different place. So when they notice, okay, I'm feeling anxious again. I want to talk to my partner about this. I want to, I need to understand what's happened. And usually, that there's quite a lot of desperation that's been activated by this point. So it's not just anxiety, it's also a desperate desire to know, as well as the fear of knowing that they're probably not going to get the answer. So the internal cycle that activates within one partner before they've even said anything is already pretty, like, that's hard to bear. That's a very chaotic kind of internal feeling space. What starts to be possible if you can find your way to slow down enough to actually stay with your present experience and track what is happening? It starts to create space for you to choose to do something different. So rather than, text your partner or call your partner or go out to your partner and start blasting him or her, you might choose to instead sit with yourself and maybe journal. I'm noticing that I'm feeling anxious. I'm noticing that I'm feeling desperate. I'm noticing that I'm terrified that my partner is XYZ. And yeah, like, even just that is such a big step for people to take. But once you start becoming aware of the cycle that you yourself are caught up in, and you want to experience something different, it all starts with you. And there's no way of predicting how your partner's going to respond. And you shouldn't be doing this with the goal of getting your partner to respond in a different way or feel a different way. And that's kind of the biggest shift. It's all about bringing it back to you. What is actually happening for you? What do you need? We're not trying to get you to be different so that your partner likes you. We're actually just looking at your life. And I think I do just also need to say at this point that some relationships are unsafe to the point that they're physically unsafe. So for some people, trying to make any change in the relationship or within themselves will result in increased risk to themselves. There are some people who, some people die in relationships like this. And if you are at all worried or even a part of you thinks, oh, I think if I change any of how I interact with my partner, they'll just escalate. Please do seek professional guidance.
And I'll thank you for that important safety message as well. And I will leave details in the session notes of services, which of course will differ all across the world. But I know here in Australia we have like DV Connect, and but I'll leave some session notes for direction. But wherever you are, please reach out to services that are there to help you, even if it's your local doctor. Reach out for help. It's a very
And
important
if
topic.
relationships are unsafe in that way, couples therapy is not appropriate.
Very, yes, no, totally. Yeah, really important information, because the reality is, we do live in a world where, and I'm really appreciate your frankness. People do die in relationships. They do. It's shocking, but it is true. And we need to face that reality so we can start to hopefully make change in that area. But thank you for sharing, because as you said, it keeps coming back to you, because I think of that. What can we control? We can't control someone else's behavior and response to whatever we are showing up and doing, but we can with ourselves, and we can. And so that work that you do to help people is help individuals or help couples where there's a healthy enough direction there, and want and desire to work together. To come back to their to themselves, to their own looking in, which is, like you said, really hard, and I can concur from lived experience as well. But working with clients too, it's one of the hardest things to do, but such life changing, and what springs from there is beautiful, eventually. So that's the work, and I wanted to that brings me to ask a bit more about. Because you talk about, when I read a bit more into your work, you talk about this, the fulfillment cycle, almost like the opposite to, well, I don't know if opposite's the right word, to burnout cycle, but it felt like almost like the coming together of the things that can help, hopefully help within your relationships, whatever they might be, with whomever, where you're feeling more fulfilled. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit more about what those things are, like that self-awareness, that coming back to yourself and connect with you, that helps along with the potential for your relationships to be fulfilling, if with a safe enough other.
So as you start to pay more attention to yourself, and I think it's, I've mentioned it's tricky to do that, but it's also tricky because we often get told we're selfish if we're thinking about our own needs and we're expressing those, or we're thinking about our own feelings and we're expressing those, we get told we're selfish. So there's like, yeah, there's just such a, on a cultural, on a systemic level, there's such a push to disregard our own needs.
Well, so one of the biggest blocks that you see, or barriers for people to do that step that can help with their feelings of fulfillment in a relationship, is the stigma that I'd imagined, and know from experience, personal and professionally, that is already quite ingrained, that me looking at and expressing my feelings and needs in a relationship and my wants and desires is selfish. Is wrong. And as you said, systemic issue. It comes from that system that's then being planted into our own internal systems. So you're noticing that, that's a challenge to overcome within that process.
As is then the guilt that comes up when you focus on yourself as opposed to somebody else. But if you can find your way into having a practice around this, and it could just be like a couple of moments each day. What am I actually feeling right now? What do I actually need right now? The first thing you'll discover is that you probably have no idea how you actually feel and what you actually need because of how disconnected you are. And that in itself, while it can be confusing initially, just stay with that. So I'm noticing that I don't actually know how I'm feeling or what my needs are. And yet I want to figure this space out. And there's lots of kind of things on the internet, like the feeling wheel, that you can, look up to try and help you.
That's a
But the
beautiful resource, isn't it? Sorry to interject there. I just
yes.
think it's such a wonderful resource for people out there that are finding it really hard to name or notice. Like I actually pulled it out the other day because I do a bit of a
Yes.
reflective practice in the morning to keep this connection with self up, and I just felt like I could identify some feelings, but I felt like it didn't really connect with my true experience. So I got the feeling wheel out. Because there's so much rich language in it, and there was this, and I can't remember the exact, but I was like, that's it. So
Yes.
it can be such a useful tool, just to, yeah, like you said, like to help support you, like with connecting with what you're feeling. But I love that you're also sharing with the audience that it's okay if you notice that you don't notice what you're feeling, and I really get a sense of. You were saying there, just stay with it, like keep giving yourself that space because you're reconnecting and that's going to take some time.
Yes.
There are resources to help, but it still may not come out. You might look at that and go, what? You know,
Yes.
the feelings wheel.
Yes.
But it may help too. But yeah, keep at it. Give space, give time.
Yeah.
It'll help with reconnecting. Yeah, sorry. And I interjected. So you
No,
were
you.
talking to, yeah, those challenges, you know, the
Yes.
as you're connecting to that self-awareness that helps with that fulfillment.
Yes. So then this is really the primary step in terms of moving towards fulfillment, is connecting with your own experience, your feelings, your needs, your thoughts, what's happening in your life that is not working for you, what's happening in your life that is working for you. And as you maintain a regular practice around this, you'll start to become aware of parts of your life that are really very draining, parts of your life that are really not giving to you. They're not nourishing to you. And you might also start to find that there are some parts of your life that are already nourishing and giving and loving. And as you continue to do this practice, and as you continue to become aware of, well, what offers me a sense of fulfillment as opposed to what actually leads me to burn out, you can start to realign your life more with the things that offer you fulfillment, that nourish your heart, your soul, your sense of self. And what you then start to be able to do is make choices about what you have in your life and what you don't. And sometimes that will mean losing some friendships or losing that relationship where you've realized, you know what, I'm the one who continues to put in effort. I'm not getting anything back. I've expressed myself as clearly as I possibly can. Maybe I've tried therapy with that person. It's just not for some people, it just doesn't gel. It's not possible to be in a relationship with that person and have it feel good and fulfilling for both partners. But as you start moving towards a life that feels more fulfilling to you, you're starting to experience a life that gives back. You're starting to experience a life that actually offers you resources internally, externally, which then makes it easier to do more things that feel good or that you enjoy, to start seeking relationships that maybe look quite different to the ones that you've had before. And that can bring with it its whole own activation. Because it can feel surprisingly bad to be in a good relationship if you're not used to it.
So there's even challenges along the way, like not just the challenges that you've mentioned already with sort of breaking that cycle and moving towards fulfillment, but then when you're making those choices with that wisdom you've gained through understanding what nourishes you, then yeah, you can get this challenge of, because you're not used to the good, the nourished, fulfilled relationship, that can feel wrong. Yeah, that your body can be in that state of threat again. Yeah. Is that, yeah, that's
Exactly.
something you notice. Yeah. Makes sense to me from, psych, and even when I'm working with people in burnout, but other, concerns and things that are showing up for them, that when they start to feel good, feeling threatened by that good. I'm really
Yes.
generalizing that because it's new, it's
Yes.
unusual.
Yes.
And then there's always like sometimes that mind might be off into what if this doesn't last, So there's
Yes.
that challenge of, yeah, I think that's just such an important point to bring up as well, and
Yes.
quite normal, unfortunately, but normal. Nothing's, wrong here. It's new. It's
Yes.
unusual.
Yes.
You haven't experienced it before, and our minds are, our bodies are trained, right, to anything that is new too could be a potential threat. So it's like
Yes.
better safe than sorry kind of system.
Yes.
What's happening
Yeah.
here? Yeah.
Yes.
How do you, yeah, what's sort of your advice there on when clients are noticing that, or when people are noticing that, what do you usually share there?
Yeah. Again, it's about slowing down, because if you're encountering something, whether it's objectively good or objectively bad, and it activates your nervous system survival response, that response is all about speeding you up and getting you to make decisions and do things quickly to fix it. But if you can find your way to slow down in that response enough, that you can come back to, okay, what's activated me? Okay, so I've met somebody and I like them, and they're not responding to me how I'm used to. Like, this person actually texts back, and this person actually tells me they like me, and in response to that, I feel like I'm, being led up a garden path, or I'm going to be made a fool out of. Okay, that's what's activating me. There's a part of me that fears this new way of being treated, because it's so unknown. And I don't know what this looks like in relationship. I don't know if this is another version of something that will hurt me. So it's really a moment by moment, like, you're living your life every day. And if you can find a way, if you can find your way to stay connected to your experience, even when it's challenging, and to find a way to hold compassion around that, and especially those parts of you that, serve a real protective function, because you, so most of the clients that I work with will have a very finely tuned part that is very, very sensitive to anything that doesn't feel okay in the relationship. And that can be as little as, a slight change in tone, a slight twitch of an eye muscle, or of the lips. Like, this stuff is really finely tuned, and it's finely tuned because it serves a survival purpose. And you have this part within you that is just looking out for you to the nth degree. And if you can start to recognize that part and hold it in compassion, this is a part that's trying to help me, rather than berate yourself for it, or feel fear in response to it. It can help you to stay present with your experience, and certainly, practice awareness of it. To what extent can I trust this person? That's a very, I that that's a that's a healthy thing to do, because we need all sorts of people. Sometimes different is, yeah, anyway, but it's about just staying connected to, well, how am I feeling in response to this? What
Mm.
is getting activated? And seeing if you can kind of find your way through that, and what kind of feedback you get from reality. So yeah, you may find that you are in relationship with somebody who can hear, hey, I'm noticing I'm feeling anxious in this relationship. And they might have capacity to just say, oh, okay, what's going on for you?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm hearing another really vital part of that fulfillment cycle, if I'm hearing right, is the skill of, and I well, the practice is probably a better word, of compassion for yourself and for those parts of you that are feeling you're threatened here, whether it's in a relationship where there's these new behaviors, new healthy behaviors, but ones that you haven't experienced before, or even if it is those unhealthy, sort of those insecure attachment sort of responses that we've learned to, to deal in relationships. But yeah, like compassion is part of, it sounds like the process, a practice that could be useful and supportive to clients in breaking this burnout cycle in relationships.
Definitely, but compassion is really, really hard. Yeah, like we hear about compassion a lot, but to actually try and offer ourselves compassion, it can be excruciating.
Yes. But such a vital, and that's why I like using the word practice as
Yeah.
well. I used to say skill a lot because for me, I was definitely my relationship with self was very critical, very, very critical. And I know there's so many of us out there dealing with quite a harsh critical voice inside us. And when we're going through difficult times or even, good times, it can still be quite rife. And yeah, so it's been a practice ever since I've discovered compassion for self. It's been a practice and with ebbs and flows, but and working with professionals like yourself who can help with guiding that way, because it is hard. It's a bit like as we've been talking about, it's hard to break this burnout cycle and relationships and everything that comes with it. It's, yeah, this process of bringing compassion towards ourselves will have its own fears, blocks, and barriers too that show up. And
Absolutely.
so that's why having it, I think it's sometimes so vital to have people like yourself who can guide us through that. We can do so much on our own, and there's lots of resources out there, but trying to make sense of it and what shows up for you personally, that's where
Yes.
having, yeah, a professional like you, I think, is important. That's a big part of the work I do as well, because I work with a lot of people who come to me burnt out and they've got such a harsh way of working with themselves. And so we work on
Yes.
that compassionate aspect as well. So yeah, such a vital but scary challenging practice to do, but vital because coming out, well, I wouldn't, well, I'm more out more compassionate than I am critical now with myself, and I can say, it does reap its rewards in comparison to, so all that hard work pays off. Yeah. But hey, what other, I was just curious too, I don't want to miss any bits, but I know it's such a big topic, and we're not going to obviously cover everything that in it all, but I was wondering, is there any other practices you wanted to share that really help with that, creating that more fulfillment cycle, like you've talked about this, importance and very grounding and step one, reconnecting with self and continuing to connect with self, always in this very, body, mind, heart, spirit connection,
Yes.
moment to moment, and but also the bringing compassion in. But is there other ones that you wanted to make mention that, when you're working with someone or a couple who are, willing together, that are things you notice are things you're needing to share or help them with to help them, yeah, get to that, yeah, point. Yeah. I know it's not a point getting to that part where they're okay on their, there's more fulfillment there.
Yes. I think the biggest thing is just slowing down because we make hundreds and hundreds of micro decisions every day. And most of the time we make them out of habit. We might have the lunch that we have every day because that's just what we do. We might greet our partner in the way that we do because that's just what we do. We might put on the clothes that we put on because that's just what we do. But if you can actually slow down and in those micro, those really small, seemingly insignificant moments, just check in with yourself around, is this actually something that adds to my life? Is this something that I need, want, desire right now? How does this thing actually make me feel? Like you might find that you don't actually like the coffee at the coffee shop down the road. Maybe you want to try a different one. You might find that, this dress is actually not, or this suit, it doesn't work with my body anymore. I don't feel comfortable in it. So you might choose to, put that away and try on different things. Like so much about this process is about trying new things, but in a really small way often, and seeing how it feels. Like touch is such an interesting one. The way that we touch ourselves, our partners, oftentimes it becomes really habitual or mindless. What would it be like to actually tune into that touch? Like when I touch my partner's hand, is that actually something that brings me joy? Is that something that feels nourishing to me, or does it not? Do I actually want to have my arm around their shoulder? Do I want them to be holding my hand? And especially if you're in a relationship where the partner is open to this kind of exploration, it can be really, really, really lovely. But you also need to be in your body as you're doing those practices to get a sense of whether it's leading to fulfillment, if it's adding to your life, if it's nourishing, or if it's not. But yeah, it's actually hundreds of these small decisions that will eventually lead to a different feeling state in your body. Oftentimes it's not the major ones. It can be, but
Definitely.
oftentimes it's small ones.
I love that too. And I felt like, yeah, I left out that really vital process of the reflecting on what's nourishing and what's not. And like you said, there's, and you gave some really lovely examples of just how those intricate nuances of, touch there, and this is what you're talking about, really connecting, but needing to come back in ourselves to connect with
Yes.
ourselves, to be able to connect in that way in the relationship, to notice what is nourishing and what's not for you.
Yes.
And that it's just that's something that I've had space and more
Yes.
opportunity and sort of connecting, and I'm privileged and very grateful to have a safe relationship to and two people willing and in a space to work on themselves and the relationship where we can share that. And yeah, so that really vital process of, I'm doing this because it's like, what's nourishing, what's not? And I even noticed that sometimes things that were nourishing at other points aren't
Yes.
nourishing now. And
Yes.
I've learned that's due to where my system's at. If I'm really stressed, touch, for example, doesn't feel like it usually nourishing like it usually does.
Yes.
But the more connected, as you've been, letting us know, the more connected we are with ourselves and allow ourselves to notice that and be able to come to that reality and noticing those nuances, and then noticing that in the relationship to be able to then communicate where it is safe to do so, what you're noticing, and what you're needing, and
Yes.
what's important to you. And
Yeah.
yeah, No, it's such a, I love, like, it's such a simple, like, appears a simple framework almost.
Yes.
It's a framework though that is hard, challenging to put in place And then it's a continual framework that we use that can become possibly a lot more automatic as we go forward, as it becomes more part of us. So yeah, it's I often talk about with clients that the how-to is often not that it's often quite simple, but it's the doing it that is complex and challenging. And but yeah, and it sounds like this is, you're certainly the same. I was wondering, I think there's always a beautiful spot to sort of go into. What have you noticed when you are working with people where they've been able to make these changes? And it might be people in your life too, or even like I've been talking about myself. But what are those benefits you've noticed? Because as we've said, this is a challenging road, this is hard, it's difficult, and sometimes knowing what can come from this in terms of those benefits or what we notice by doing all this work can keep us on that road, can keep us doing that. And I was just wondering, what are those benefits, or what are the things you notice when people are feeling a bit more fulfilled within their relationship with themselves and hopefully in their relationships as well, what those benefits are.
I think the biggest one is that life opens up. It opens up within you. It opens up around you. It opens up in your relationships. The survival responses have a way of making life very narrow, very small, very, very limited. And as you can start to step out of the survival space, which I think is its own process. And then as you can start to step into a life that is aligned with you, it opens up, and things that didn't seem possible start to feel possible or start to be possible. The way that you experience yourself shifts. The way that you feel in your own body can shift. The way that you relate to yourself shifts. Yeah, and it brings with it so much more space, and it steps you out of this place of tense, anxious anticipation and into a space where you can flow with life and flow with yourself and flow with your relationships. And you can breathe. Life doesn't feel so constricting anymore.
I love that life opens up. Life opens up. And the other, like, I even notice your body, like as you like it's almost like I often like wriggle room. I feel a little bit like I have wriggle room. I have space to kind of move and
Yes.
dance and like, the
Yes.
dance of life. But yeah, when we're constantly in that threat mode, yeah, there is that narrowing, constriction and yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, thank you. Life opens up. Yeah, that's beautiful. I always ask this question of my guests, if there's any sort of like parting wisdom, and it could be something new, it could be something from what you said that you just really want to leave the listeners with, that you can impart on this topic of, relationships are so important, right? Relationships, but this experience of burnout that as you say, quite a lot of people could be experiencing out there or are experiencing. So yeah, any parting wisdom that message that you'd like to share with the audience?
I think it would be something around the way that your life is at the moment and the way that you are in your body at the moment. That is your absolute best attempt to make the most of your life, given your experiences and what you've known. And that's okay. And there's space for more.
I love that. I love it. I got goosebumps because that's so important. That is your best right now. Your experience is your best right now. And I love the connecting word, ante, not but, and there's more. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And like, I'm sure, those listening out there who may want to connect with you in some way and what resources or services that you have. Of course, I'll leave, ways to connect with you in the session notes, but anything you'd love to share with listeners now who are like, I really want to connect with Anna and look at her work a bit more or maybe her services. Yeah, how they can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is a great place to start. I've got my links to all my socials on there, but I also actually have some, I have an online course available and a few other resources for download that speak more to this space. I also have, I try to share my knowledge through my blogs, and I have practices within those blogs that you can try. The online course that I developed is specifically for women, but I think men who find themselves in this situation could also take the course. And it's exactly about what we've been talking about today, about finding a way to be in your life that reconnects you with your reality and your experience, helping you make sense of this kind of this organized, chaotic state that you might find yourself in a lot of the time, and then how to just gradually start moving out of that survival space and into a space that feels better for you. So it's I've tried to really capture some of the essence of that process for those who want to have a go at doing a self-paced practice. That can be a nice one. I've kept all the modules short, so yeah,
It's consumable, yeah. Like,
it's consumable.
I
It's
always think that, yeah, because especially when we're coming from already that very chaotic space and
absolutely.
exhausted, burnt out, we can only consume so much, and we've got, life, there's lots. So that's really very thoughtful and very compassionate, and yeah, keeping those modules short. But yeah, I'll make sure that I have your links there to those resources. But like, the website is the gateway to all those as well, so they'll be up there. Yeah, to connect with Anna and do so, because I haven't connected with your course, but definitely connecting with the blog and the downloadable resources, and they've been very useful for me to start to really open up and understand this area, this context of burnout in relationships, and how I can support those who come to see me that might be in that space. So yeah, get hold of Anna's work and work with her. But yeah, I just want to, of course, a deep gratitude again for making time and space. I mean, giving energy to us and sharing everything that you know on this topic. Really appreciate it, Anna. And I've learned so much. This my brain is going to sit back and make some space to really consolidate. But thank you.
Wonderful. You're so welcome. I just love that I've had this opportunity to share, because I think a lot of people find themselves in this space and they just have no idea what the hell's going on. And I think your podcasts are really useful to just help people realize that this is normal and this is something that I can do something with.
This is normal. It's okay. And I hear that from a lot of people, like, it's sort of validating, normalizing. And yeah, there's something I can do about it. There's some steps, there's some support, linking in. But yeah, it's really awareness building. And I feel like there's two words that sit with me, awareness and then hope, because there's, and there's something, there's direction I can go to when I'm ready, when I have space. But awareness and that it's okay, we're doing our best with what we have right now. So thank you for being part of the When Burnout Becomes Reality community now of guests. So I definitely appreciate it. Thank you,
Oh,
Anna.
you're very welcome.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you for listening to When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. This pod relies on the power of its listeners to push it out to the four corners of the earth in hope that it reaches as many people in need as possible. So please like, share, follow, comment, or leave a review. Pay it forward, and I will be forever grateful. If you'd like to share your burnout to recover experience, or you are an expert working in the burnout field and would like to share your wisdom on the pod, please email me at shannonswales@burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To keep up to date with episode releases, please follow us on your favorite podcast provider or by joining our mailing list at www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To check out the burnout psychology services on offer at Burnout Psychology Support, my telehealth practice, visit www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com/psychology services. Once again, thank you for listening, and please take care of yourself. Bye for now.